that he seated the audience with two people that know a lot about this business activity water. One is my colleague Sue Steiner from Villanova, who's actually sat in some of my classes to make sure that I conduct myself appropriately. So if you have any questions and you don't want to talk to somebody who's involved in developing this, please talk to Sue. So she's and she will be very objective and candid. And I also have Barney Cargill from University of Alabama, who is, can we say that you're sort of Villanova faculty there?
Almost.
Because Barney's coming up to visit with us for a year because Alabama is actually going to be adopting the business activity model next year. It's coming fall. So, and I'm sure Barney has heard me make a couple of presentations on this and he can answer questions as well. So, again, I'm here to talk about, and I really like the title that you gave, Experiment in Self-Learning. Because really, it is an experiment. We don't know if this thing works. Okay, we've got some objectives that we adopted. The profession has encouraged us to adopt, but I think we'll have a good time, and please ask any questions as they might arise. So what are we going to do this afternoon for about the next hour or so? We're briefly going to discuss the BAMS pedagogy, okay? We're also going to talk a little bit about this Carnegie and Pew Foundation program, a couple of AAA's support, and this has allowed us to begin a formal assessment of this instructional approach, which is somewhat unique. And last but not least, we're going to comment throughout on the BAMS delivery and the viability as to whether it could be perhaps offered in a distance learning format. I think Mike and Steve gave me an awful lot of things to think about this morning, and I'd appreciate your comments too as we go through this thing, because I think we'll see a lot of the PBL-type interface here as well. And again, please ask any questions that might arise. Now, what's the motivation for the business activity model? Well, in your report here, it says that you're an extremely dull person. Our experts describe you as appallingly dull fellow, unimaginative, timid, spineless, easily dominated, no sense of humor, tedious company, irrepressibly drab and awful, and whereas in most professions, these would be considered drawbacks. In accounting, they are a positive thing. What more motivation do we need? That's the way the public has perceived the accounting profession. Now, in all seriousness, the profession, academics, increasing awareness that our best and brightest are no longer choosing accounting as a discipline, that also played a huge role. But those are all tied together as well. And essentially, that's what got my colleagues, Dave Kroll and Robert Grinaker, who truly are the pioneers behind this model, to apply for some funding from the AECC and to start thinking about doing something like this. I guess it really is amazing. That was 10 years ago. It's a decade ago. My, how time flies. So, the business activity model hopes to treat three educational maladies. Now, here's what you're going to see. Here's the influence of working with scholars from other fields, which is what the Pew Foundation and the Carnegie Fellowship has had a profound influence on me. Lee Shulman is the president of the Carnegie Academy for the Scholarship of Teaching and Learning. And he published a really neat little article entitled Taking Learning Seriously last year in a magazine published by the American Association of Higher Education called Change Magazine. And he identified these three maladies, and it just so happens they're the same three diseases or symptoms that we try to address in the business activity model. One, amnesia. Why is that an element? Students forgetting what they learn in class. Yes, ma'am?
Before I quickly write anything down, are your slides available someplace?
If you want my slides, I'll email them to you.
Okay.
Just don't take notes. Just send me an email and I will send it. Because, you know, oftentimes, you know, when I bring all the stuff and I end up seeing them in the trash and stuff, all you do, they go back to it and give stuff away. And then in retrospect, somebody provides more superior performance later. Well, I don't really want those stuff. But email me, I'll send you stuff. Absolutely. ACHEANACH at MSN, that's in Microsoft Network.com. Or just log into Villanova's website, my other mug's there, and we'll track you down that way too. So amnesia, students forgetting what they learn in class. That's a big problem, right? How do we cure that? How do we overcome that? Another one, I love this one. Fantasia, the student's illusory understanding or persistent misconception. This is a latent time bomb. This is insidious, because this can lie dormant for 5 years, 10 years, or 15 years, while a student has to apply something, and they think they apply it correctly, but it's not applied correctly because they never really understood it to begin with. Fantasia. And last but not least is inertia. The fact that we teach them a bunch of stuff, they just never use it. Three maladies that we hope to address in the business activity model, and three challenges for all of us, whatever we do in the classroom. All right, so how does the BAM work? Well, let's spend a few minutes then. Who's heard of the business activity model before? Okay. Yeah, a lot of stuff here. Okay, good. So the vast majority haven't heard anything, so I'll spend a little time talking about it so that you get an idea of just what's going on. Oh, I almost forgot. I just finished summer school, and so I said, I love this amnesia, fantasia, inertia. So I went into my intermediate class using the BAM, and I said, no, guys, I know this is a lot of work. I know this is summer school and it's supposed to be easy. But the reason we're doing this is because of this. So I go into my final exam, okay, at summer school, and one of my student groups is missing. Five of them are out in the hallway. And I go, what are you guys doing? Oh, we'll be in a second. We'll be in a second, Tony. And so they come in, and they're wearing Superman blue t-shirts that say CPA across the front, and on the back they have written amnesia, fantasia, okay? I mean, that's how twisted some of our homegrown students are. So, what's the business activity model about? Well, okay, in addition to those three maladies we hope to cure, we have five course objectives. Motivate students for the accounting profession, promote technical competency, develop lifelong research skills, advance critical thinking, and foster communication skill development. Those came right out of what the profession says they want. And I call your attention, what we're talking about now is intermediate financial accounting, where it's historically been two semesters, the backbone, financial accounting is considered the backbone of the accounting world, right? But that's this course, which historically has been focused on debits, credits, rule-based focus, crank, technical competency. But technical competency is only one of five objectives, and there are no hierarchical ratings or rankings there. Over two semesters, our business activity model students basically mimic the accounting and financial reporting processes found in the real world by conducting analytical reviews, soliciting information from clients, preparing correcting entries, and drafting complete sets of financial statements, including all note disclosures. Okay? So that's what the business activity model is about. Now, and I don't want to offend anybody here, but I'm going to tell you what I have here it allows technology to be incorporated in the classroom. Now, we have this big raging debate at Villanova, right? Technology will be infused in the curriculum. We don't care how, we don't care what, but you will use technology. Okay, I mean, just take the little thing and stuff it down my throat, okay? So this whole thing about technology turns a lot of people off. So what I want to make perfectly sure here is if you think you like the business activity model, you don't have to use technology. You can deliver it in paper, okay? But you can use technology, and I honestly do believe you can deliver this in a distance learning format as well. So it's an instructional approach that is robust to delivery medium. Okay, so I like to say technology is purposefully kept in the background. This is not something that is that's technology, I'm not going to do it. This is an instructional approach, and you can use whatever technology you want, but I think it can be successfully incorporated into the DL format. So what's the general approach that we use here? Well, we confront students with real-life business context. We introduce ambiguity. We deal with a client company is in the hydraulic services industry. How many of you are familiar with that industry? Anyway, isn't that wonderful? This isn't like Dell or Disney or Ben & Jerry's. This is hydraulic service. What the hell is that? It's obscure, there's nobody knows anything about that, okay? It requires students to provide provide a full range of accounting, tax, and consulting services as members of a professional services team. Heavy emphasis on group work. Today, because we're not in a DO format, we do stuff in class. We rely heavily on the Socratic method. We're facilitators, okay? And we focus on financial statements and disclosure. That is a huge difference from most intermediate courses. Lots of disclosure. Look at the great body language we have at this table, by the way. I've already alienated. You're already sitting back.
It's freezing.
No, it's just, we're keeping our arms close to our chest just
not,
to be warm.
It's
absolutely not. Okay.
All right. See, nobody's going to fall asleep. All right, and see, what is that? Can anybody tell me what that piece of equipment is up there? What is it? Not a crane. What is it? It's not a crane. Be more specific. What is it? What is it? Got it out. It's a drag line. It's a drag line. Okay? It's a common piece of equipment in the hydraulic maintenance services industry, okay? Now, how many students do you think know what a drag line is? None. Okay? All of them think that when they go out to work in industry, they're going to have trucks and vans and cars, but they're never going to have to deal with drag lines. So that gives you an example of the type of obscurity and ambiguity that we confront them with. And we actually do non-monetary exchanges, trading trucks for drag lines and things like that, which gets into some interesting issues. All right, what's the specific approach? Students are introduced to accounting issues as they are encountered by a fictitious company during the first 7 years of this life cycle. We have a textbook that we use as a reference, but we don't assign any readings. It's there for a student to look something up. A textbook does not drive the course. What drives the course are a set of materials where the client says, here's what happened during the year, here's my financial records, help me, I need some services. And that's where they have to figure out what the accounting issue is and how they're going to solve it. Groups progress from doing compilations in year one to a review in year two, and then they start doing some audits in years 3 through 7. Now, they're not actually doing auditing procedures, because most of these students haven't had an auditing class yet, but we introduce auditing, we tell them what a compilation is, we set the stage for a class later on, but it gives them a context within which to operate. And for each year, students recommend correcting entries, prepare a complete set of financial statements, including all note disclosures. Now, classroom activities. This is where I need your help, Mike and Steve. Here's historically what we do in class every day. Before the first day, students are provided with client-prepared financial statements and records. General ledger, unadjusted balance sheet, income statement, no statement of cash flows, because most of our clients can't do that on their own anyway. Okay, and all the books and records and a narrative discussion of what the company's gotten into each year for 7 years. And that we could probably get from the web, right? We could provide them all this information. Then the students come into class after they've met as teams, and when they come to class, they have to ask the client questions that will allow them to determine whether the financial statement drafts they got are in accordance with GAAP. So groups also, yeah.
You said groups already.
Yes, yeah, groups are set up early in the semester.
Right. Is all this stuff done in groups?
Yes, everything's done in groups.
But they're not graded as groups.
Okay.
You're a grading student, right? At least you didn't.
No, we're not grading as groups.
No, they still have to take tests.
That's a good point. Let me get to one question I have here. How do I set groups? That's administration. There's so much theory out there about it. I don't worry about it. I've let them pick their own. I've assigned them. I don't really care. That's however you want. They're not graded as groups. They're graded individually. There's no group components. But you know what? If you feel there's so much group work that you want to assign a group grade, go ahead. I don't care. It's up to you as the instructor. I'm not trying to take away your student or your instructor flexibility.
How many students do you typically
have? Excuse me?
How many students do you typically have?
At Virginia, when we first started doing this, we would have classes as large as 40 at Villanova, because we're a private institution. We have much smaller classes. However, there are other schools that are currently using this, Cal State Go. I think their class sizes are 35 to 40 as well, and Virginia's are still about the same size. But they're not huge sections of 100 or 150 or anything like that. Right? Okay? And I've never had fewer than 15. I had a really lighted third section last semester. And Barney, how big are your sections?
30 to 35.
Yeah, and that's usually the size for most intermediate sections. So anyway, groups come into class, and we say, okay, what questions do we have for the client? And they start asking questions. And typically, there's 8 or 9 questions they have to ask for each year to extract information from the client. And they also have to make sure, and let me take a time out here. This is much more than going, oh, there's a problem with accounts receivable. That doesn't get it. I mean, that's what they're used to doing. That's issue identification. That's not asking the question to get the information that they need from the client. So what they have to do is they say, well, you know, do you have an age receivable trial balance? What experience are you having with any collection problems, something like that? And if there's a specific technical issue that requires note disclosure, they have to make sure they capture that information as well. Case in point being perhaps pension disclosure, where they may need a rate of compensation increase, something like that.
It needs to be disclosed in accordance with the SAS.
Day 2. Yes, sir.
I was just wondering, where did they get the knowledge base to know what question to ask?
Ah, great question. Where did they get the knowledge base? Okay, guys, got any questions? You got my email address. You got your reference text there. You got a link to the FASBs. Go for it. Yeah, intro accounting, review all the debts and credit stuff.
Yeah, that's my question. What did you do before they get this class?
Only one thing.
What class?
They take the standard intro, financial.
But you went through a lot of debts and credit in that course.
The assumption I made, because this is a very volatile issue in schools, I assume they know nothing about debits and credits. So what we give them in the first 4 to 5 weeks is we give them currently the Smith-Burney tutorial that teaches them debits and credits for 4 weeks. We give them a bookkeeping skills test after the 5th week, and then we roll on.
So they do that on their own outside of doing this stuff?
They do it, and we kind of assign them modules from that to make sure they're doing it. Okay, it's a self-graded quiz type thing. They can print the quizzes off for them, and we monitor them. So it's kind of like a homework. But in the meantime, we're kind of going over some of the theory of financial statement disclosure and stuff like that while they do this little tutorial.
So you
talk
about that in class, people?
Excuse me?
You do that in class?
Yes. But essentially, they teach themselves debits and credits. And guess what? It worked. I mean, they can do it.
They come in from elementary, though. They had the elementary course.
Well,
whatever they got.
Whatever they got.
Yeah. But I mean, it's just the first course in accounting.
If they had an elementary course, it was really not a debit credit course. It was really an understanding of financial statements course.
That's exactly right. I think that's the assumption that we make, because we've transitioned more to the understanding financial statement course.
So this is Dan Hill CD-ROM.
So anyway, that's what they've had for 5 weeks, and in week 6 we start this, and we go through 3 years in the first semester and 4 years in the second semester.
So when you say day 1 here, you've already had it for 5 weeks.
Yeah, but day 1 being, this is usually a 3 to 4 day sequence in the activity model. So when I say day 1, it's not the first day of class, it's day 1 of the first year or day 1 of the second year.
So you've done 5 to 6 weeks of them getting them through the debits and credits. So this is like the first of October.
Yeah. And that's a good point. Thank you for clarifying that. So then the students, after they get the information, they have to come in and use that information to prepare correcting entries. Not adjusting entries, not debits and credits as if they were the bookkeeper correcting entries. This is what was wrong. This is the entry we need to fix it. This is what goes in the financial statements. So the issue is really, what is the right number, and how do we fix the books to make the right number? Okay? Now see, back here, I know there's some people running. We need to teach them this. And how do you get around with it? Okay, well, it depends on your school. Now, some schools, the instructor's really nice, user-friendly type guy or gal, and they will say, well, you know, if you read these pages in the text, this might be helpful. You come to Villanova, forget it, you're on your own. The only recourse is you email Katnack, you call Katnack, you come see him, okay, and then I'll give you some leads if you prove to me that you've done some research on your own. So I'm more of a tough love kind of guy, and then you have some people that are, you know, more nice and reasonable, but it's your choice, whatever it is you want to do, however you want to get them in the literature. After we agree on the correcting entries, the groups go back and they have a couple of days to prepare a complete set of financials. And the financial statements are graded by me. I mean, in my case, I play the role of an audit manager, and they get review comments just the way I got. I mean, there's red all over them. And you know, they're sitting here going, ooh, look, don't I get any credit because they bounced? No. Okay. I mean, look, they look like crap. The format's lousy, and you know, this is missing, that's missing, and blah, 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 blah. I mean, this is not a bookkeeping exercise. This is the product that you're sending out to the world. And so it's amazing the kind of financial statements they end up doing by the end of year seven. We have little accounting disclosure checklists that they can use to give them some hints, et cetera. Actually, what happens is we've got some instructor tools, and I'm not going to show you any of the tools here, but we have PowerPoint slides and things like that, which help guide the discussion. But once the students ask the right question, boom, we show them the answer, and after class, we go out and release the answers to them so they don't have to take any notes or anything, and they get all the client answers to the questions. Okay? So that's kind of the way that works. All right, so what are some of the unique course characteristics? As you can imagine, the classroom time today is devoted to looking them in the eye and figuring out if they're thinking appropriately, okay? Critical thinking and communication skills is really what we're focusing on in class. The delivery of technical information has been shifted outside the classroom, which fits in perfectly with the distance learning type stuff.
You sort of just wander around in class, is that right?
I wonder.
You look in on the teams and listen to them.
Absolutely. And then we have team debates. Like somebody might say, well, you know, we had this question, but what about that? And the teams kind of start arguing with each other. And I had a really great person, a guy by the name of Neil Snyder, management professor at Virginia, who had a profound influence on my teaching style. I never make a declarative statement in class. I go, really? What about that? Gee, how do you know about that? I mean, and one of the things in the first semester that typically infuriates a lot of students is they take anything out of me. I mean, all you do is ask questions. Okay, you're not telling me anything. What the hell are you paying me for? And one of my teaching evaluations really great early on in the first semester said, it is a shame that one of the finest instructors at Villanova no longer teaches. Okay? And you know what? Yes! Okay? In other words, we were doing exactly what we were supposed to be doing. Okay? So, at least what I was trying to do. We've replaced lectures with analytical review exercises and some detailed take-home research projects, which we'll talk about in a second. There's no CPA exam focus, although being a financial accountant every now and then, one of my exams will have an old CPA exam question in there. Course revisions are continuous. Thank you, FASB, thank you, SEC. And we integrate the course with other classes, as Sue can probably tell you the audit and tax side as well. So, does it work then? Okay? Well, what's the history of the business activity model? Well, until the past year, the model had been only used at the University of Virginia. I'd use it there during the developmental period with my colleagues. Skeptics have argued that only great professors and great students, that accounts for any apparent success. And while I'm flattered to perhaps be considered one of those professors over there, I don't think that's necessarily the case, but we've got to bring some empirical evidence to bear. Formal assessment was not possible until all the materials are complete. So in other words, as you're preparing materials, remember, this is a decade-long process. I mean, you don't just create something and go, oh, well, here's the first go-around, let's see if it works. Chances are it won't, okay? So you keep refining the materials until you get them to the place where now you're ready to assess. And so that's kind of where we are now. Historically, we had very few resources to facilitate adoption by other institutions. Quite honestly, we'd have a lot of people come into UVA and they go, wow, that's really cool, that's interesting, wow. And then they leave. And then somebody else goes, wow, that's really cool, that's interesting. We had no way. I mean, and again, we said, look, you guys want these materials? Then we give them to them. Well, like, what are you going to do? There's no way to use them. You're not trained. So we've started, last year we had our first formal training session out of Villanova, Villanova Conference Center. We had some schools that said they were interested. And we said, well, if you're interested, would you like to come to this? And they said, yes! And so we had like 20 people there. I think, didn't we, Barney? We had about 20, 25 people out of Villanova Conference Center, and we actually went through some training, and we went through the materials and stuff. And we also have some really good user manuals now that we've created to help instructors execute. No. As of right now, you holler me, we'll give them to you all for free. I don't know how long that will last, but we'll talk a little bit more about that later. Despite all those problems, despite the fact we don't know if it works, despite the fact we've had one training seminar, despite the fact we just developed a training manual, this past year we had 5 institutions adopt the business activity model for the first time, with another school coming online. Ohio University, this is interesting, Villanova did it because I moved to Villanova. Cal State Chico did it, Dort College, St. Mary's University of San Antonio. The real sleeper is Ohio University adopted it and didn't even tell me. Okay? They got the materials from somebody else. One day I get this call from Dave Kirch, he's like, oh, I never used it. I'm like, hey, thank you, Dallas. That's really good. I'll tell you a funny little story about that later on as well. So, guess what? 5 schools come online. At Villanova, I'm not the only one instructing, and I have 2 new faculty that have never done problem-based learning before doing it. So now I have 5 schools that I can start collecting data on to see if, in fact, this thing works. Assessment can now begin. And that's kind of a unique, fun situation to have, but it takes some coordination. So what's my formal assessment project? Well, it began last fall with financial support provided by the Pew Foundation and the American Accounting Association. It's also being supported by the Carnegie Academy for the Scholarship of Teaching and Learning. And here's where I'm going to put in my plug for the Carnegie Foundation. There's the Carnegie Academy. And those of you who are interested in this new developing emphasis, it's called STL, Scholarship of Teaching and Learning. And it's a systematic way of recording, displaying, examining, investigating, and building powerful methods to improve classroom teaching and address those maladies we talked about. The bottom line is what we're saying is there's a big difference from being an effective teacher and being a scholarly teacher. And one of the differences is that we are very disciplined about how we conduct ourselves in the classroom, the investigations we conduct in the classroom, how we evaluate what we do in the classroom, and most importantly, how we communicate what we do in the classroom to others. And that's what the Scholarship for Teaching and Learning is all about. Please holler if you want any more information on that. But those are the people that are supporting this research. Now, what's the project? Well, what are my goals? Does it work? How well does it work relative to more traditional methods? Does it affect subsequent courses in the curriculum? Those are the 3 questions that I hope to provide answers to over the next decade. What's my research design and method? Now, I guess you're thinking, no, AAA has not started yet. Okay, this is not a research presentation. This is still a CPE section, okay? But I got to tell you, it's a multi-phase longitudinal investigation, and I'm only in phase 1, investigating during the course. We're also going to look at the performance subsequent to the course and after graduation. So this is a long-term project.
Virginia, I assume, didn't you?
Excuse me?
You collected some information about job satisfaction. So
yeah, we collected some limited stuff, but that was basically poo-pooed by journal editors. Yeah. So we started off.
I mean, you did. Yeah. We're finding that the graduates were accurate in jobs.
Absolutely. Again, that's all anecdotal. It's also collected during the developmental stage. So the criticism of that data was valid. Yeah, but you're right. We collected a lot of data as we were fine-tuning the materials. So we're using a lot of metrics, a lot of tools, lots of attitudinal surveys, focus groups, standardized tests, and a variety of things. And you know, you got your classic strongly agree, strongly disagree type Likert scale. Today, how can I best describe my efforts? Agony. Okay? Lots of stuff going on, not enough time to work on this. What have we done? We created 3 attitudinal surveys, pilot tested them, delivered them to over 300 intermediate financial accounting students at 5 universities. And the results I'm going to discuss with you right now were compiled only from the pre and post surveys of the first semester. The second semester responses for this first year are still being coded. Okay? So the responses you're going to see, in my opinion, based on my previous experience with this model, are going to be worst case. Because again, remember, this is a 2-semester treatment effect. And what we're doing in the first semester is we're destroying the educational model that all of these students were used to dealing with, which is basically the academic Bolivian model of read, memorize, and regurgitate, right? So, and we don't do that. So these are probably as negative as you're going to get, and historically the second semester evaluations end up being much better. So what's the profile of the students that have been run through this year? Average age, 21 and a half, 70% less than 20 years old, over half of them female, most of them juniors, a lot of transfer students. You know who that is? That's Cal State Chico, because they get a big inflow of students from the community college system. Majors, 62% are accounting majors, 31% double major. We'll have more to say about this later. Academics, pretty good students, 3.3, over half in the top 10% of their high school class. Experience, 60%. 60% had no, what am I getting at there? I'm getting at, these are not students whose all their parents are CPA. Okay, so the vast majority of these students had no affiliation, no externship, no internship, nobody in their family was an accountant. So, which is kind of interesting. Work, this comes back later, we'll talk more about it. But look at this is the one that really shocks me. 30% of these students work at least 10 hours a week. That number's even higher at Villanova. Villanova students, because it's a private school with outrageously high tuition. I mean, these kids are working, I think, 45% or 20 hours or more a week. And by the way, they're also double majoring and president of the Glee Club and all that kind of stuff. Study hours, and that kind of gives you some idea of the study you need to go. All right, now what did we find on the critical thinking dimension? Remember my course objectives. What I'm trying to do here is we are evaluating and assessing to see if we met our objectives. Not whether or not they passed the CPA exam at a higher rate. We'll find that out in 3 years. Okay? Do I really care? I don't really care. You know, my goal for the CPA exam pass rate is that at least we don't get worse than we were before, right? Because then I open myself up for criticism. Students appear to enjoy identifying and solving problems, but they admit that, you know, they have a hard time doing this. Is that surprising? Not really. They've never done it before. After the BAM, students agree that ambiguity and uncertainty hinder their ability to solve problems. Ta-da! Okay, there's a revelation. If you don't give me all the facts like you did in the textbook, I can't solve it. 17.8% rate uncertainty is their greatest dislike for the course. Okay? They just hate that. And 22.4 suggests the course could be improved by reducing the uncertainty. Please give us more information. Just make us feel better about this whole thing. This is so troubling. Okay, now this gets even better, for example. Students acknowledge that the BAM encouraged critical thinking, however. So they will give you that. Yeah, it made me think more. I really don't like that uncertainty. The median response on the 5-point scale was 4 for that particular attribute. And 10.3% rated critical thinking and analysis what they most liked about the BAM. Ooh, now think about it. Think 10% like the critical thinking analysis. There's this disconnect here, which we'll see a little bit more of later on as well. How about group work? Well, student advocates or working groups were generally positive, and they like working in groups, and they were consistent from the beginning and the end of the semester. They acknowledge that working with others is important, and the group exercises are an effective learning tool. However, there are several inconsistencies in their attitudes towards group work. 26% said, we love it. That's what we really like about this course, the group work. Then 16.8% said, man, that's the best thing about the business activity model, the group work. And then they say, we hate it. 16% say we hate it. I mean, so you got people on this end say they love it, people on this end, I mean, I don't know what you got. There's a couple of things.
Just like real life.
Real life. Right. It's uncertainty, right? It just troubles the hell out of them.
Structure they like to work in their jobs and teams.
That's right.
Communication skills. Now, this is where I still have a little work to do. Students rated the importance of oral communication skills. Unfortunately, the rates declined from the beginning to the end of the semester. In other words, they didn't think that they improved their oral communication from the course. Yet, they rated their communication skills higher at the end of the semester than the start, and they were neutral on whether the course improved them. Part of this, I think, is an instrument problem, because most students don't identify communicating in a client context with improving their oral communication. They still think that
have to deliver a paper orally, okay? Or I have to debate or something like that. That's how it is. So I think I need to refine my measures here in the future.
Same thing with the writing. They don't equate writing financial statement notes with improving the writing. So we're not capturing much there either. So again, they're neutral on whether or not the course can improve those as well. So how about researchability? Their ability to kind of teach themselves. Well, guess what? Students prefer courses that rely on text over those that encourage library research, even though they admit that they're comfortable with their web-based learning skills. They still want the text. At least this group. After one BAM semester, students reported a higher expectation that the course text should have most of the answers. Again, that gets back to the uncertainty, right? They want that eliminated. And they're certainty. Motivation towards the pet. Now here's where I was like terrified. Okay, so now they hate the uncertainty, they hate me, they hate the course. They don't want to be accountants anymore, right? Well, it's not quite that bad. Students recognize the value of accounting. However, student ratings of interest in accounting declined slightly after the first semester. Okay? And they were neutral as to whether the course increased interest. I can tell you at the end of the second semester, those things turn around because now they're used to the drill. Okay, so again, you got to remember it's a two-semester treatment effect. If you look at this just after the end of the first semester, you could be very, very negative about it, which is a point to think about when you're doing curriculum revision, when you're changing curriculum, and you have a one-semester course. Think about what it is you're trying to do. I mean, when did you measure? Should you have measured it earlier? I mean, when is the response going to take effect that you wanted? Maybe it's in another course down the road. And if you measure after one semester and you say, well, we're going to give you a semester. If it doesn't work, you're out of here. Well, it may be too early. So you got to think about those types of things.
At Virginia, you had an internship between the two semesters. That probably has some effect on sales.
No, because we don't have that.
No, no. Also, it doesn't exist.
No.
But that internship really helps the evaluations in the second semester. It was more like a lens.
And that's a good point. Where do you put the internship? At Villanova, this was another challenge. Again, your educational structures. We had intermediate one in the fall, then our very best students skipped an entire semester and went off on a spring internship. Okay? And then they came back and took this business activity model in 4 weeks during the summer. And guess what? Those evaluations were almost all fives on their life for the business activity model, despite the absolute hell we put them through in 4 weeks, for the very reason that you're talking about. Now, the students that weren't so bright, or not as best and brightest, but the ones that didn't get the spring internships, that were around for the spring semester, okay, they didn't get the internship effect. And even their evaluations were very good as well. Okay? And we can talk about why some of those reasons. But nevertheless, students agreed the BAM enhanced their understanding of the profession and their understanding of the importance of the issue. 43% indicated the BAM's realism was what they liked most about the course. Remember? Wait a minute here. 43.9% say they like the realism. Isn't it ironic that most students appreciate the realism but dislike its uncertainty? I mean, they don't equate business with risk, all right? Which is just amazing. It's totally amazing. So we have our work cut back. Course rigor. Let's see what they say about rigor. Students were almost in their assessment of the course as being time-consuming, challenging, and interesting. 12.1% cited information overload for the course. So we're going to come back to this. So 12% said, man, too much information. I don't know, I can't sift through. You know, it would be so much nicer if you could just lay it out like a little problem like we have in the books. Those I can deal with it, but here we just, because really the information is not, let me tell you how heinous we are. You remember, who remembers the old earnings per share calculation? Anyway, which APV was it? APV 15, exactly. And we had the common stock equivalents, and we had the two-thirds of the AAA bond rate or whatever the hell it was, you know. Well, what we did is, originally when we designed the material, it was the old APV, okay? But we never took out the AAA bond rate stuff. It's still in the material. Why? It's noise.
And so there's a lot of stuff in there. Do you use it or not? I mean, I'm not going to give you absolutely everything that you need to solve. You have to be discerning. And so that's a lot of the information overload that they comment on. Well, it's there. We must have to do something with it. Maybe not. Okay? Client doesn't always give you everything you need. There's a lot of extra stuff there. Sometimes there's stuff missing. 11% dislike the time-consuming nature. We'll come back to this as well. They generally agree that the BAM, however, was a valuable learning tool. So, okay, it takes a lot of time, it's a lot of work, but it's good. 17.3% reported the BAM to be what they like most about the course. 10.1% recommended that nothing be changed in the course, which is the year.
What's the score on our students that
they're helping with? About 250 usable responses because one of our sections not a little condition of growth. That won't happen yet, however. Alright. But how do the instructors feel about this? Now we know how the students feel. How about the instructors? Instructor feedback. There's your typical instructor up there. One instructor said, I really enjoy the BAM. The students seem more interested in the class, although I don't think they like having to spend a lot of time to meet outside of class. I think they're struggling on how to learn on their own, which, absolutely, that's part of the treatment here. There's a lot less frustration among the students than I thought there would be. As for me, I'm having a ball. This is by far the most fun I've ever had teaching, moderating, and intermediate accounting class. Another, and I remember I only got like 7 markers out there. I love teaching the course this way. I hope to do a much better job in the future. I had some difficulty knowing what to emphasize and reinforce. So the students had a better idea what to study. Our students seemed to enjoy the interaction analytics. These were all unsolicited comments, because we haven't done the instructor evaluation yet, because I wanted to make sure the instructors had been through a full cycle and then run them through again, then evaluate them. So I don't get, you know, initial resistance type stuff. I wanted to go through it at least once. So what are my results? Well, students appreciate the model realism and faculty enjoy using it. Downside, students dislike the uncertainty and miss having lectures. That's it in a nutshell. And don't know if it works yet, because we're not done. Got a lot of work to do. But there's a lot of intriguing stuff when you start doing this classroom assessment stuff. Yeah?
It seems like all you're attempting to measure is affect at this point, right?
Attitudes, right.
Yeah, how they feel about the course as opposed to how
actual
efficacious the course.
Although Barney and I are running some stuff, they were in the enviable position, Alabama was, of participating in the study before they adopted. So they collected a lot of demographic information and performance data and attitudinal data so that they can then have kind of like a control group in their own institution, which is really kind of cool. And we actually did some testing that we have to accumulate some results with that aren't in here on terms of actual performance, on classroom performance.
Yeah,
in Kentucky,
they do have an inclusive integrated individual and you test it individually. Like, what do you test
them? Well, depends on what school you're at.
What do you do?
Okay, remember, you're dealing with some of my evaluations that he is Satan. But I will tell you what I do.
My knowledge or more on understanding issues.
I'm an old guy, and so you know, I was brought up at the University of Nothing Much, and it was all CPA exam focused. So there's this little genetic aberration in me that still thinks I somehow got to teach a lot of the traditional type testing. I haven't given up on the
so
technical
stuff.
You
test them on traditional type.
Some. Okay. Some. So yeah, I do. Some of my colleagues.
Is that like this law when they have a better class?
Oh, big time. Remember, he is safe. Okay.
How do they do on?
Actually, not bad.
I mean, compared to a pretty college.
About the same. And think about it. Guess what? You just answered the reason why I do what I do. Because I want to know how they do relative to how I used to do it the old way. Okay. Now, once I'm convinced, once the data shows me, once my colleagues show me that this thing does work, then maybe I'll redesign my assessment instruments to more fully capture some of the other objectives that I do. And that's a fair criticism. I still prominently test and evaluate based on technical competence.
Do you do anything along the way if they want extra help on the technical competency to make it happen after that first 5 or 6 weeks?
Only if they ask.
Well, like if they say, oh, can we have a review session to go over how to do these things?
Sure.
Sure.
But it's got to be, they got to tell me exactly what they want. They've got to prove to me that they've researched, they have a valid question, and that they've made an effort on their own.
But now they don't want to be able to do where it's for shit, so they'll show them
that. And they have to prove to me that there's a specific issue that they're having trouble dealing with. But what you don't want to do is then have out of class review sessions that end up being lectures to replace what they're not getting.
Right.
Okay, see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So talk to me. Prove to me that you're not getting something, that you've made an effort on your own, and then, okay, yeah, then maybe that's a good idea.
And they're going to be, they know it's going to be on the test.
Excuse me?
When they know it's going to be on the test, then they're going
to... They can pretty much figure it out. We're only dealing with 8 or 9 issues every year.
Well, I know anecdotally that Virginia, they reported a significant increase on CPA exam passage after doing this. In other words, they didn't try and make better CPA exam takers, but they ended up better CPA exam. And I think this all hinges on long-term memory. I think they remember it longer and haven't learned this way.
Do most of your students go on to have master's program after this?
Not to date, no. We don't have the end of our rule, but to date, in fact. But that's an issue that's coming up later. Okay, yes,
sir. How much time do you spend on the second class?
It depends on what it is you want to do. In terms of prep,
with them. Yeah.
I have very few students come to office hours anymore. My students communicate with me almost exclusively through email.
Including the time they put on service.
Almost so that I don't think so come to office hours. This is an email generation going on. So they'll get an email, they'll be working on it like 2 a.m. in the morning. I get up at 5:30. Perfect. So the instructor, after you've been through it once, the prep time is almost negligible. Less. I've got to remember again. I'm still an untenured, hopefully not for much longer. But at Virginia, I'm trying to crank out research. And then my colleagues bring this on me. They didn't even tell me if I was going to be doing this stuff right on the internet, okay? And so I had to sit down, and I had it down so that, during my second year, I would look at my instructor notes the morning I was going to class. So I wrote the instructor manual to suit me so that I wouldn't have to do the prep. Literally, the instructor manual is such that tells you what you do, what questions to ask, why you're asking the questions, what tools you need to be doing. It tells you exactly how to run class that day so that your prep is zero. Yes, sir.
What I've noticed in talking to you about
the
students having difficulty and
For example, and I'll give you my opinion, one of the weaknesses of our finance program at Villanova is they only take intro financial. They take no other accounting after the intro financial course, and which is tragic. Virginia makes all finance majors take one semester of the band, and the finance students are like, wow, I mean, think about what they get. They see the financial statements. They see the financial statements coming into the numbers. You know, so they have to do it. So I think, at least from our Virginia experience, finance students can work well in this environment and it helps them from our financial analysis perspective as well.
Did you mention it all?
No. Oh, okay. True confession. Every instructor, we don't get paid that much, so my colleagues and I decided we took a place at that, we had a little thing of wheel, and said, okay, what is it? We get one lecture a semester. So our lecture in the spring semester, the first semester, is pensions, the electronic. Because we just haven't designed the materials yet, a take-home perspective that really gets pensions across
quickly as people can be delivered. So it's really information for them. So that's really the number that we get.
All right, now let's get to these unexpected findings. This is stuff that applies not only to the BAM, but might also apply to some of your stuff as well. Student demographic effects on curriculum introduction and implementation. One of the things that hit me completely blindsided when I came to Villanova was the effect of double majors. Huge negative effect. The students were expecting, I mean, who told them double majors? Their parents. These are their yuppie parents, right? Well, if one major's okay, then two ought to be better. And after all, we got to go out and, you know, get you on the fast track to that BMW. So we even have some students who have three majors, right, Tim? And the dean promotes it because the dean said, man, three majors, look at them. You know, and it's, can you major in accounting and double major? I would argue, not if the majors are of high quality. Okay, I would say, yeah, a lot of schools you can double the major, but, you know, what do you get? Here, double majors, after they went through the first semester, we saw students just abandoning, they were abandoning systems. Systems was the real killer, because systems had a lot of coding type of stuff and programming going on. The other effect was student hours worked. I mean, when kids are working 20 hours, they're double majoring, and they're playing football, my God. I mean, when are they going to find time to meet in their groups? When are they going to find time to do all this stuff outside of class? So these have profound influences as well on the curriculum. Could an alternative delivery system help? And that's kind of where we're getting into perhaps this discussion of distance learning. I think so. Could it be an answer? Maybe not necessarily the whole answer, but I think it's one delivery option for sure. Today, now, I think probably, Virginia doesn't rely extensively on the web, but at Villanova we do. We deliver all course materials through the web. Syllabus, all the requirements, solutions, handouts, take-home research projects, everything. We're basically paperless. We have an exam, we don't go over it in class, we post the answers, they're gone. Yeah, I mean, it just, sounds almost like a distance learning course, right? We're almost there. I mean, almost all the administration is done there. Can the course's objectives, all of them, still be achieved in a distance learning format? Well, I think absolutely. I mean, we have to revisit how we're going to assess if the course objectives are achieved, which is what Mike was talking about. Okay, I mean, that's the next step. I'm already thinking, if I go DL with this, how am I going to test? Okay? But I think you could. I think technology being what it is, I think the missed class interaction, the simulated client accountant's dialogue, which we go through when we're asking questions and getting information back, I think that could be effectively simulated through streaming videos as well. This is the way this process is supposed to work. This is why it's important. So I think you might be able to get that as well in a distance learning format. Any trade-offs necessary? Yeah, probably. Perhaps in the oral communication area. Maybe you do the one thing where you bring them in for an oral exam to see if this person really is a live human being that can talk, you know, and not just click. Instructor, time commitments, training, all that kind of stuff. Definitely going to be an issue. But on the flip side, though, we might be able to address some of those student concerns about the time-consuming nature, the problems of the groups meeting and getting together, maybe the information overload as well. If we string this thing out over a longer period of time. One of my colleagues said, you know, I think you could get higher student ratings if you make it a three-semester course. Why? You know, I'm not worried about student rating. I mean, what's the trade-off here? I mean, what is it you're trying to achieve?
Are there three credit courses?
Three credit courses. Absolutely. Yes.
Is there any correlation between attitude toward risk, toward uncertainty, and negative attitudes toward these, and attitudes toward these verbs?
I haven't run the correlation yet. That's a great question, and I have the data. I didn't run a proc 4 on it.
Because the ones who don't like critical thinking, uncertainty, they're probably the ones the accounting firms don't want anyway.
Oh.
And if they're the ones that are complaining about this, then it's really not a problem.
Time out. I got to tell. This is really cool. I didn't put
just
it out.
Just whisper. I don't want to know.
This is really cool. This is really cool. We have surveyed all of the employers, okay, and asked them to rate all of our interns, okay, that have gone through this. And we also have the students evaluating their firms and the internship experience as well. In 6 weeks, I will be able to tell you if the firms like the people that have the demographics that they say they want, okay, no, which is what you're really saying. So if the student that says they like the textbook, okay, remember the students that like the textbook, high rating on textbook, hate ambiguity, you know, all that kind of stuff, is this the one that the firms rated the highest? And guess what? We're going to have a seminar out at the Global Conference Center where we bring the firms in and say, okay, here's how you guys are rated. You know the students that you said you really like the best? They are. You know, we'll give you their profiles, and conceivably we can do it by firm as well. So that is the ability to, you know, it's really cool to be able to track the students that way. So, yeah, it's, I get
but,
so excited.
But I got to say, there's a little bit of a shortcoming there too, because what the firms really want is partner potential people, but yet at the internship level, the bias is get somebody who's productive for that internship.
Yeah, and to be quite honest, there's another issue here. Those of you who are scratching around for a great research paper and topic in the educational arena, it's go out and find out how much the firms have changed their internship programs, okay, from when I was, you know, in public accounting. I mean, the answer is zero. They're struggling because they're still giving them grunt work to do, and these kids have much better skills than doing the grunt work. So when the students go, is there any reason we hate public accounting? I mean, we're having students come back from internship experiences now going, I don't want to be an accountant after that's what it is.
By all accounts, county enrollments are in the bank nationwide. What's the impact on county enrollments in Virginia?
On this?
We
don't know in Virginia. The Virginia accounting program, quite honestly, is shrinking badly, but it's because they're all majoring in finance, but the finance people have to take it anyway. So there's this kind of disconnect. I think the Virginia experience is that it's one more driven by economics, because the finance majors in Virginia place really well in Wall Street. So that's the only one I can speak from. I feel no Sue. We've stabilized the decline, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just
yeah, we've stabilized, and I think next year our enrollments are even up a little bit. Yeah. That's so. I think we've kind of cut the losses of Villanova, but it's interesting that you mentioned that. I have a paper in the research forum with Noah Barsky entitled "Some Thoughts on the Demise of the Accounting Major," and you really got to pick up a copy of that, because we've made an argument that perhaps we've been one of our own worst enemies by making our curriculums more rigorous at times when other curriculums happen. In other words, it's one causal factor. In other words, if you're a student and you don't want to work hard, I mean, why should I? I mean, I get paid the same amount and work for less over there as opposed to going to do all this great thinking. So there's a lot of dimensions that we can find. We outline a number of them in that video. Yeah?
Do you have any stats on the demographics of students who like and dislike this, like Chinese background, European? There's a lot of thing of cultural background you like and dislike.
Yeah, I have those, and guess what? I didn't because of the time limitations. That is all available. That will be in a paper at some point. The one thing I can tell you is something that comes to mind, and it's not exactly on point, but I want to say it because it's, again, it relates to curriculum introduction, and that is, be very careful when you implement curriculum changes. For example, instructor A, instructor B, instructor C. Don't assume that all those three classes are homogeneous student pools, because depending on the time of day that those instructors taught and any previous reputation that the instructor may have, you may have bias in terms of the enrollments in that section. And we found that out, that in fact the ratings in one section went through the floor, but then when you ran the GPAs, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, those were all the worst students that self-selected in that one instructor's class. Flip side is, that instructor got really horrible evaluations too. Okay? So you're raising a lot of good points, and the demographics is
hugely important. The one other thing I'm excited about the DL perspective is this would allow us, this might compensate having class. We could actually bring in professionals from the firms and have them interact through this format if we operate resistance learning, which would really be cool. That might even be better than having in class, right? You have real people, okay? And it also allows delivery to more schools and more consistent format. And here I'm not trying to go out and heal the unwashed masses in terms of their accounting education, but what I'm getting at is, let's say you have the small community college for this first five or six different preps, et cetera, and it's teaching a bunch of, but knows they want to do something different, then maybe you have a tool here where you could have an on-site facilitator, but most of the course being delivered from a location, which would really be cool as well, if you're into it. The other thing is other educational markets. I was talking to Gary Taylor at Alabama, and he was telling me that, and this is also true at Ohio University, advisory boards really seem to love this. When you bring in CPA firms and they see this thing in action and they see the students participating in this, they go, wow, this is really cool, this is what we want. And one firm went so far, isn't this right, Barney? They said, gee, can you guys, this is what Gary was telling me, that will you guys teach this to our staff accountants, the ones that have already graduated? Would you do something like this? So there's perhaps other educational markets as well. By the way, Virginia also uses the BAM in their Ernst & Young funded master's program. So they teach this thing in the summer to, this is how the accountants get financial accounting in the UVA summer program that's funded by Ernst & Young. So, what's the upside to all this? Innovative and structured approaches will allow us to capture the gut-wrenching drama and conflict found in accounting. For example, accountants preparing to do battle, there they are. The thrill of victory, there he is. And of course, the agony of it. And again, if you want any more information on this, let me point this out. Finally, we have a paper coming out in Issues in Accounting Education in November that outlines this. I don't really like that paper. So I have a previous version on my website, which I think is more user-friendly, but that's the academic version, right? The one that gets published. So you can look at that one, or you can download one from my website. Also, there is, again, let me give you some insight into our philosophy at Virginia. We're dealing with McGraw-Hill Irwin because we don't have the time or the expertise to make the materials look neat. Okay? That's not what we're good at. So we don't ever expect we're going to make any money. That's why we kind of give all this stuff away for free. I suspect once we end up coming out with a product that there'll be a fee. I don't think it's going to be that astronomical, but we're not going to make any money on it. If you're interested in that product, contact Melody Marcus. I am going to be doing presentations on Tuesday of this coming week here in the Marriott, I think on the third floor someplace. And if you're interested in attending to see what the actual materials look like, check in with the McGraw-Hill booth and sign up. And if not, I think the rooms were 308 and 309, but I can tell you. Other people that would be more than happy to talk to you about this, I encourage you to talk to them. Don't talk to me about it because I'm a developer, okay? I participated in developing this. Contact Mary Harston at St. Mary's. Talk to Bob Hilbelink at Dort. Dave Kircher at Ohio will talk to you. Brock Murdoch at Cal State. And Jerry Dougherty at Villanova. And the reason I put Jerry up there is Jerry's a guy that said, group work doesn't work. And now Jerry's teaching it, and I love it. So thank you so much.